Congressional, the House Committee on State and Federal.
There's your order, July 12th, 2005. Open a public hearing, possible work session on Senate Bill 572A. Got a 3-minute timer. That gives you 3 minutes. I have a 3-minute timer that gives you all 3 minutes in 1 minute. So depending on the testimony, we'll see which one I use. Mr. O'Leary.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 572A comes to you from Representative Andy Olson and Senator Rick Metzger. This is the bill that would establish reporting mechanisms and protection for nursing staff members who experience workplace violence from a patient. There are two proposed amendments before you. Both amendments replace the text of the current bill. The -A18 amendment comes to you from Representative Olson, and the -A17 amendment comes to you from Representative Barker. The substance of the two amendments are the same, but their applicability is the only issue that's different. The 18 applies only to ambulatory surgical centers and hospitals, but the A18 is broader in scope. It's applicable to healthcare facilities, adult foster homes, home health agencies, hospice, in-home health care agencies, and residential facilities. As to the substance of the bill, the bill, and under both amendments, this is true, the bill permits reporting of workplace violence if a nursing staff member has reasonable cause to believe that a patient has committed assault on a nursing staff member or on another nurse, and it allows either to report the incident. If the incident is reported, it's got to be reported both to law enforcement and the nursing staff employer. The law enforcement agency that receives the report must enter relevant data about the incident into the Oregon Uniform Crime Reporting Program, which is the successor to LEDS. That is, if the law enforcement agency files a written report. There is civil immunity for a report made in good faith. The identity of the reporting person is kept confidential. And there is separately a provision for an annual report that is required to be made by the employer regarding all of the incidents of assault that have been reported under this section. And it also must include any other assaults made known to the employer. That report may not contain personal identifiers. Finally, there are several provisions regarding nursing staff members who are victims of assault and their ability to refuse to provide further treatment to patients who have assaulted them without certain accommodations, either being accompanied by a second nursing staff member or, in the case of home health care services, unless the member is equipped with a communication device that allows the nurse to call for help. There is a provision regarding self-defense of nurses and what constitutes self-defense. The provision allows the employer to determine whether or not appropriate self-defense was used. And there's a provision that prohibits retaliatory action against nursing staff members and makes any retaliatory action an unlawful employment practice. The measure does have a subsequent referral to House Budget.
Okay. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Krieger and committee members, my name is Andy Olson. I'm a state representative from House District 15 and co-sponsor of this bill with Senator Rick Metzger. And I just want to take a few moments, and I can do it in less than 3 minutes, too, sir. Oh, yeah, do the challenge, yes. Anyways, this bill has come a long ways since its introduction in February. There have been several amendments to the bill on the Senate side before its passage 29-0 and eventual movement to the House side. As you are aware, this bill was scheduled for hearing in front of this committee at the end of last month. Having learned there were several concerns about the bill from the hospitals and home health care providers' perspective, I felt it necessary to form a work group with all the interested parties and to some degree fine-tune the bill before presenting it back to you. Therefore, last week on July 5th, I conducted a work group meeting with several lobbyists who represent the mentioned groups, including the Oregon Nurses Association. The direction of the work group was to focus on the four goals I felt was imperative to create a solid bill with good policy. With that in mind, the following goals were identified to develop consensus amongst the group. Number one was to ensure nurse protection in the workplace, to develop reporting procedures regarding assaults of nurses, three, to establish a data collection system, and four, to clarify use of force in the workplace. The first obvious question is do nurses need protection in the workplace? And I have attached two letters from nurses describing incidents in which they were victims of assault in the workplace to your packet there. The objectives were fairly simple, I felt. To ensure nurse protection in the workplace, this could be accomplished through reporting and tracking incidents, education and awareness, and developing a violence prevention self-defense program. Giving clarity concerning the use of force added to the dimension of this bill, and a data collection and reporting mechanism provides one with information to learn from the types of incidents, how to prepare and better prevent future incidents. Let me go through the bill quickly with you since Mr. O'Leary did a pretty good job with it, but I just want to kind of just expound on a couple other little pieces of the bill, which is the dash 18s that I'm here for. Section 1 deals with the definitions. Section 2 is the nuts and bolts of the reporting procedures, when, where, how, why, and by whom. This section gives discretion to the victim for reporting an incident. It has changed from may to shall, back to may, through the bill's journey. The bill makes it clear that if an incident is reported to police, the employer must be notified as well. Additionally, the section gives discretion to law enforcement depending upon the incident, the manner in which the agency will respond, for example, in person or over the phone for receiving the report. Section 3 and 4 describes the annual report the employer submits. Section 5 is the violence and self-defense program. It was a clear issue that I wanted to make known that nurses could use reasonable and necessary force. And there's a piece in there, too, as well, that I'll describe a little bit later. Section 6 describes the nurse backup when a patient has a history of assaultive behavior. Section 7 identifies the use of force issue. First, it clarifies that nurses can use reasonable and necessary force to protect themselves. And second, it provides management the ability to determine whether or not the level of force used was appropriate. Second, Section 8 deals with the home health care. If the patient has a history of violence, the nurse has two possible options to tend to the needs of the patient, one being accompanied by the second staff member, and two, having a communication device available. Section 9 and 11 deal with unlawful employer practice. Section 10 deals with the Oregon State Police capturing the data from the Uniform Crime Reports, UCRs, submitted to the Law Enforcement Enforcement Data System. In closing, I feel that this bill accomplishes the goals that were mentioned earlier and provides a great avenue for protecting our nurses.
Okay. Brian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Brian DeLeishman, representing the Oregon Nurses Association. I have very little to add beyond the staff summary and that information that was given by Representative Olson about the actual content of the Dash 18th. Did want to just spend a minute on history. This bill, obviously, we're now Dash 18s. I want to show you what we did on the other side. These are Dash 11s and Dash 12s, and you can see as highlighted, these are responses to concerns that came from opposition, things that were deleted all the way along the road. What you have left in the bill is really boiled down to just those salient points that Representative Olson has outlined that deal with the ability to capture data and actually lend some protections to nurses in the workplace. You may or may not be aware that nurses are three times more likely to be assaulted on the job as compared to other workers nationally. They find that in settings, especially, for example, emergency rooms and other units, with meth epidemics and other drug issues, that the assaults continue to increase. With that, I'm available for any questions, but I think your staff and Representative Olson did an admirable job describing the bill, and I'll not use the rest of my 3 minutes. Thank you.
Okay. No questions, committee members?
Wow.
Brian, the nurses are assaulted because they're trying to poke people with needles.
Point well made, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Oh, good.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Have Bruce Bishop, Dave Fiskum, and Ed Patterson come up, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Bishop, appearing on behalf of the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. I can cook this egg in 1 minute. The Hospital Association supports the Dash 17 amendments, which would broaden the scope of the bill to a number of sites at which nurses work, because violence against nurses and other personnel in healthcare facilities is not limited to hospitals or ambulatory surgical centers. We think it's appropriate if our goal is to create a database of assaults, to create that database among all of the places where nurses work and have direct patient contact. The Dash 18 amendments are focused just on hospitals and ambulatory surgical centers. The Dash 17 amendments, which we support, have a broader scope of other programs and facilities in the state. We would urge the committee's consideration of the Dash 17 amendments. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Dave Fiskum here representing Providence Health System, which has determined in the last number of days that we still must oppose Senate Bill 572, both in the form of the printed bill before you, as well as in the form of the Dash A18 amendments, which we did not see until just a few moments ago. Then I have perused them, and nothing will change my testimony that I'll give in a minute and try to stay within, Mr. Chair, your 3 minutes. I should add that we have worked with Representative Olson over a period of weeks to try to find middle ground on this issue. Several points along the way, including the meeting to which the representative referred, it appeared we were close, and we do genuinely appreciate the consideration he's given to us in our discussions. But as I told Representative Olson over the weekend, my client reviewed the issues embedded in this bill again over last weekend and instructed me to state its clear and strong opposition to the bill. As a health system, we operate 7 hospitals in Portland, Milwaukee, Newburgh, Hood River, Seaside, Medford. We employ thousands of nurses, and we are committed to the safety of these nurses and, in fact, other direct care staff acting every day to combat violence in the workplace. Our opposition to Senate Bill 572 should not be taken to mean, as has been alleged at points along the way by the sponsors of Senate Bill 572, that we tolerate, quote, a culture of violence in our hospitals, unquote. We absolutely and affirmatively do not. Why would we? We work hard every day to assure the safety of nurses at a time of a nursing shortage, sometimes very difficult environments. We're committed to the safety and dignity of these patients, a point which in some ways I don't think is covered very well in the current version of Senate Bill 572, which, upon a quick read in the last moments, appears to omit any mention of potential distinctions between general patients and patients suffering from certain kinds of diminished mental capacity for whatever reason. The guts of our concern about the bill really focuses on reporting requirements in the bill. If police reports are indicated because alleged crimes have been committed, we and others make them. If they are not indicated, we don't. The matter does not need to be the subject of legislation, and upon a read again this morning, the new language I've seen in Senate Bill in the Dash A18 amendments makes some of the reporting requirements on us appear to be fairly ambiguous. We've said from the start, as this bill has proceeded through this session, that we're going to sit down and work together with the ONA to talk about ways to improve safety in the workplace. If there are such ways, we're very open to them. We also would encourage you to consider very genuinely the cost impact of this bill on a number of government agencies, and to be sure there are fiscal impacts on Oregon hospitals as we try to comply with the new reporting requirements, which we consider to be substantial in Senate Bill 572. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I hope I've stayed within 3 minutes. Thank you. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ed Patterson. I'm representing the Oregon Rural Health Association. In my prior life, before the legislature, I spent 10 years as a small hospital administrator, and I'm very familiar with the kinds of how combative some patients can get. In those 10 years, there was only one time when I had a nurse who wanted to call the police regarding the patient. That patient was a patient in the critical care unit of the hospital. The patient was sedated and mildly, in my opinion, combative, but she wanted to call the cops to have them resolve the issue. And I told her that was out of place, that when a patient is in our hospital, the most important person in the hospital is the patient. It's not the doctors, it's not the nurses, it's the patient that we take care of. And that has always been the policy of the hospitals that I've been around. Most hospitals that I know of, and I know I did when I was an administrator, had policies dealing with combative patients and assaulted patients and violent patients. And we instructed the nurses on how to take care of those individuals in that hospital. And only on rare occasions had we been found it necessary to call the police or report a criminal assault. They do happen, and I understand that. But to put this bill forth and say it's going to solve any problems, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think hospitals take care of that pretty well right now themselves. I would only say that if the bill is going forward and it's going to be passed in the name of collecting the data about assaults in healthcare facilities, we would support the Day 17 amendments and make it a complete reporting requirement for all health delivery systems. Thank you.
Okay. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'll direct this to Mr. Bishop, although I didn't know anyone else can chime in. I was just trying to comparing the A18s and the A17s. Is the scope of facilities covered by the bill under the amendment, is that the only difference between the two versions?
Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, I believe that's the case, and in checking with committee counsel, he believes that's the case. I haven't found any other discrepancies, but our intent with the Dash 17s was to expand the scope of the facilities who are nursing staff employers and subject to the annual reporting requirements in the legislation.
Chair Krieger, Representative McPherson, the only other, and it is a subtle difference that I found, is within the definition of nursing staff member, which appears under Section 1 in both versions. The A18, which is Representative Olson's version, defines nursing staff member to be a registered nurse, licensed practical nurse, nursing assistant, or any other assisted living personnel providing direct patient care. The Dash A17 is almost similar. That appears at Section 1, Sub 10, and that is a registered nurse, licensed practical nurse, nursing assistant, or other assistant nursing personnel who provides direct patient care while employed by a nursing staff employer. It is slightly different. I don't know the reason behind the subtle difference.
I'd like to put that question to maybe the panel here. I would read those as being different words saying the same thing, but I would like to get a reaction from the panel there. It's the definition of nursing staff member on the A18s is in subsection 8. It's starting at the bottom of page 1, and it's in subsection 10 on page 2 in the A17s.
Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, I was not aware of that difference, obviously, between the drafts. I think that they probably are intended to mean the same, and they are intended to provide, protection to nursing staff members while they are employed. It's for workplace incidents, not for things that happen off the job or when they're not employed. But I didn't realize that that was a discrepancy between the two bills. As we are sort of reading these drafts in real time right now, I've also been told that there appears to be a difference in the A8 in Section 2 of the A18s. It refers to a nursing staff member. In the A17s, it refers to any person. So there is a different reporting requirement between the two amendments as well. And I did not realize that Legislative Council had made those distinctions.
So if I could follow up on that point, Mr. Chair, it looks to me as though the difference would be then that under the A-17s that it would be not be permissible for anybody but a nursing staff member. I'm sorry, under the A-17s, anyone could report. And this is a permissive reporting. It's may report in each case rather than any obligation to report. But that the only person who under the A-18s would be permitted to make a report would be a nursing staff member.
And Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, I believe our preference would be for a broader requirement of reporting. Our position has been if these are assaults, they should be reported. So they should be reported by any person, not just by a nursing staff member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any of the committee members have any comments or questions? Just of interest to me, do either of you have any statistics? I realize they're not keeping statistics, but anything to indicate whether assaults on nurses has been growing? Is it connected in any way to meth and the number of people in our hospitals that get taken in there for meth and things of this nature?
Mr. Chair, we do not have specific statistics about the incidence of assaults against nurses. You know, frankly, I would not be surprised if there has been an increase. There is an increase of violence generally in society, and hospitals and other healthcare facilities are, you know, dealing with patients who are in considerable stress and physical and emotional pain. So we're not saying that nurses aren't exposed to very stressful situations and that assault. We agree that assault occurs, but we also think that hospitals, as Mr. Patterson testified, have been addressing this issue for a number of years. This is not a new issue. Hospitals have policies to prohibit violence, not just against nurses, but against patients, against other staff, against visitors. Hospitals intend to be places where it's safe to get care. We are health-caring institutions, and you can only do that in a safe, healthful environment.
Anything further?
Okay, Mr. Chair, the only other quick point to add from a hospital perspective is that we have had no difficulty at any point along the way in the requirements in this bill related to training. We train staff. We train all staff, not just nurses. This bill pertains to nurses because of the relating clause, but that's an obligation that we already incur and have no difficulty with that being embedded in this bill. But that may be on point to your question.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Sarah Myers and Marvin Pickle.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Myers. I am the Executive Director for the Oregon Association for Home Care. We represent skilled providers of home health, hospice, and in-home care, which includes therapy and DME services throughout the state of Oregon. I'm here today to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 572 in its engrossed form. I, again, also am looking at the amendments in somewhat real time to digest whether or not home health agencies are still in or out of these two iterations. The -17s, of course, includes home health agencies, hospices, and in-home care agencies, which is a very new iteration, whereas in the -18s, as proposed by Representative Olson, home health agencies have been taken out of the definition under Section 1, Sub 7 of a nursing staff employer. However, I believe that based on the way the language still is written in this bill, or excuse me, in this amendment, whereby discussing the nursing staff member, Nurses of a hospital-based home health agency are employed by the hospital, not the agency. So I think, in effect, what this particular amendment does, as has in the current version of Senate Bill 572A, is divide my membership in half, requiring only the hospital-based home health agencies to comply with the Dash 18s or the Senate Bill 572A, leaving out all of the freestanding facilities from compliance. So that is a big concern for my organization at this time. I think I would echo some of the comments that have already been made by some of my colleagues in that, stating that there is a nursing shortage in the state. To insinuate that we would place our nurses in harm's way in dangerous or hazardous situations to provide care in a home setting is simply not a factual statement. One of the things that is very different from a facility-based organization to a home health setting is that the home health agency has the option to not provide service from the very start. So that is something that we consider through the assessment process to make sure that the patient is receiving care in the most appropriate setting and that setting is a safe environment. In addition, all of the agencies in the state of Oregon are Medicare certified and require that we comply with conditions of participation. And those conditions of participation require us to establish policies for patients' rights and responsibilities that include covering protective services for our caregivers. So in addition, I think, Chair, you had asked about statistics, and I wanted to let you know that I did provide statistics for the Senate committee and have provided those for you here as well. The Department of Consumer and Business Services was gracious enough to conduct, to pull some information, rather, for me based on assaults in home settings. And while that encapsulated also some residential care facilities, there was absolutely zero data to report that any incidences of assault had occurred on a home health agency nurse within the period of the information that was pulled. In addition to that, we had conducted on behalf of our association an individual survey of all of our members, and I've provided that to you as well, which indicates that there were also zero incidences of any type of violence or assault on our caregivers that had been reported. So with that information, I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Can you talk to us? You gave us a sheet. I just noticed accepted disability workers' compensation claims. Most of them are hit, kicked, assault. Nurses' aid, skilled nursing.
Yeah, this particular, Chair Krieger, this particular report was the report I referred to. It was compiled by the manager of the Research Analysis Division, Department of Consumer Business Services, Ronnie Reichley. Basically, what I had asked her to do was give me a report of information on nurses, home health aides, licensed practical nurses, and other type providers to show whether or not there was any data to support any claims having been filed that resulted in any type of disabling workers' compensation claims, which I believe is the way that the state is currently compiling that data. I'm not an expert on that, but essentially what this report showed was that there were only two lines, as you'll see on the front page here, that indicate that the industry of home health care services was listed in this report. And if you look at the detail under the employer name, specifically with Senate Bill 572, it addresses a licensed home health agency. And the two incidences that are reported here are both of, one, the state client employed provider system, which is not covered through this piece of legislation. And secondarily, Morales Home Care Services is a, at the time this was done, was a probably not a licensed in-home care provider, which are also not included in 572A engrossed. So neither one of these two providers were listed on this report would be impacted by the legislation, because the legislation specifically targets a licensed home health agency, which is a different categorization of licensure than an in-home care, than a hospice, or than the client-employed provider system.
Say a few words, please.
Certainly. Chairman Krieger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Marvin Fickle. I'm the superintendent of Oregon State Hospital. I'm here on behalf of the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services. I had originally intended to present written testimony as well, and have in the past presented oppositional testimony against this bill. Having just received the A-17 and A-18 amendments, however, we are no longer in opposition to the bill with the inclusion of those amendments. It does appear from Mr. Bishop's comments that we would be more supportive of the A-17 amendments as written. You had asked for some data, and I can tell you that from the standpoint of the Oregon State Hospital, last year in 2004, we had approximately 217 incidents which were of assaults or other contacts which would have arisen to the level of a reporting. From the standpoint of the hospital, we do not believe this would be a substantial burden on us, although other state agencies may be impacted. Thank you.
Committee members?
Mr. Fickle, does that mean that you already compile this kind of information on reported assaults by staff members who have been assaulted, and so that this wouldn't require impose a new reporting requirement? Is that what I'm understanding?
Chair Krieger, Representative McPherson, that is basically true, insofar as we, like every other hospital, does develop a database of various instances of problems, which would include potential assaults, real assaults. I say potential. Many of these incidents do not rise to the level of an assault 2 under a legal definition, so therefore, from the standpoint of the police, would probably not be a reportable under this bill.
Thank you. Further question from Ms. Myers. You mentioned that there were no reported assaults, and I think you were referring to OSHA data, so that would mean, I think I understand, assaults resulting in injury. Do you compile any kind of record now of reported assaults, whether they are result in an injury to an employee or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, I believe that the agencies through Joint Commission accreditation are required to maintain records with respect to reported incidences. I'd have to check the specifics about that. But most home health agencies are accredited through this national body. In addition, I believe that through the conditions of Medicare participation, they also collect this information. Now, as far as the statewide mechanism, I'm not certain as to whether the OSHA database is the only existing that would maintain a statewide record or not.
Okay. Follow-up, Mr. Chair. The key question I'd like to focus on is, to what extent does this require that you gather information you're not gathering now, or is it that you would then be required versions of the amendment to publish information that you're not publishing? Is the problem having to compile, or is it the problem having to make it public?
Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, I think that it is a slight nuance between the two, but I do believe that there would be an administrative cost to collecting, analyzing, and producing the public report. I think that the proponents would say that if there is nothing to report, then there would be a lesser amount of administrative cost in that. But I would assert that we would still have to put together a report that still said that we had zero incidences, I would argue. I think to the extent that we're not already doing this, I believe that most agencies probably compile this within their data with respect to the surveys that they undergo, and it is a part of a larger piece of information that is prepared when the agencies are surveyed for Medicare certification as well as for accreditation. The impact as far as cost is going to vary. It's going to vary because urban agencies will have a greater ability to absorb the cost, whereas a rural home health agency, for example, Asher Home Health Clinic in Fossil, Oregon, has one nurse that is doing the care as well as administering the office and making sure that all of the services are maintained. So the cost burden does vary. We know for a fact that cost to provide home health services is 15 to 17% greater in rural areas. We're struggling right now in home health to make sure that service continues to remain a service that is available and accessible. And in this state, where we have been the number one state to receive a waiver to provide community-based services and to provide care in a setting that is the most appropriate, it's very difficult for additional regulations to be added to a home health agency where I believe that the cost is much more efficient where it's appropriate to provide this level of care.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Anything further? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That has completed our list of the people that have signed up. Is there anyone else that wanted to say something? Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jim Carlson, representing the Oregon Healthcare Association. I did want to go on record as opposing the Dash 17 amendments and the inclusion of licensed long-term care facilities into this legislation, which would bring in assisted living, residential care, nursing facilities, others. As this legislation has been moving through the process, we've been talking with the proponents and the others about some of the differences in terms of both federal and state rules and regulations governing staffing and abuse prevention and reporting requirements in those settings that are very different from the acute care setting. And so I did want to go on the record as opposing the Dash 17s.
Okay. Any committee members, any questions?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Do I make the motion? Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the Dash 18 amendment to Senate Bill 572A.
Representative Boquist has moved the Dash 18 amendments into Senate Bill 572A. Objections or discussions? If not, so made.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate Bill 572A as amended to Budget Committee.
Representative Boquist has moved Senate Bill 572A as amended to the Budget Committee with a due pass. Any objections, discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Boquist?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 572A as amended moves to the Budget Committee. And we have completed our work for the day.